Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to welcome back to the Salieri Report. A CPA has joined us several years now. Patty Kemmerer from Kemmerer and Schooley CPAs in Northern Virginia. Among many other accomplishments, she's been Salieri's CPA for many, many years. And I always want to get her on the Salieri Report because her combination of integrity and breadth of knowledge and experience is really is just very wonderful to have in your life. So I can't recommend her highly enough. Patty, what an exciting time to be a CPA.
It really is.
Welcome.
Thank you for that nice introduction. And yes, the phone has been ringing quite a bit, people asking, what do we do now?
Right. And of course, you can't say because they're... You know, there are big differences between the House and Senate bill, and they're just now going to reconciliation. So, it makes it wildly complex. Well, let's go back to current law. I want to make sure that people focus on what they should be doing before the end of the year. And so that's really driven by current law. And as you said, there were changes in 2017. So why don't you dive in and help us... help us walk through what we need to think about to prepare for being ready to sort of close out the year and being ready for our 2017 taxes.
Okay, great. There weren't a lot of changes in 2017 from 2016 law, but I did want to mention a few items for people to be aware of and to think about. One is that the medical expense deduction for taxpayers who are 65 and over has increased to 10% of adjusted gross income. The last 2 years, it was capped at 7.5% of AGI for seniors when everyone else went up to 10%. But for 2017, the persons 65 and older have caught up and their medical expense deduction has to exceed 10% of AGI before any of it becomes deductible. So that's one change for 2017 I thought people should be aware of. Also, the phase out for the Roth and traditional IRA contributions have risen slightly, so that will allow a few more people to take advantage of the tax benefits for those particular retirement vehicles. And the traditional IRA phase-out range has gone up $1,000 and phases out for single taxpayers between $62,000 and $72,000. And for married filing joint, it's between $99,000 and $119,000. The Roth IRA phase-out range rose $1,000 to $118,000 to $133,000 for singles and rose $2,000 for married filing jointly, and that's gone up to a phase-out range of $186,000 to $196,000. So that will allow a few more people to take advantage of those tax benefits for a Roth IRA and a traditional.
Patty, to put money in for the 2017 tax year, when do they need to fund those?
Those need to be funded by April 15th of 2018. Even right. If you file an extension, there is no extension for making those contributions. So those must be made by April 15th of 2018. That means they have to be in the account
right. By
that date.
Okay.
Now, another thing to note is that itemized deduction for mortgage insurance premiums are no longer allowed on the Schedule A. And also, this is a biggie, mortgage debt forgiveness deduction of up to $2 million is no longer available.
When did that phase out?
This year, it's gone.
This year, okay, yeah.
Yep, this year it's gone. And I know that at least in my area, people are still selling their, short sales and foreclosures. So that can hurt, but there's always the option of showing insolvency if that's the case, and still being able to avoid paying tax on any forgiven mortgage debt if a person is insolvent. So that's still an option available, but the law that said the debt forgiveness for mortgage interest has been phased out. Also, the tuition and fees deduction is no longer allowed. There was an option for taking the deduction instead of the American Opportunity Credit or the Lifetime Learning Credit, but that is also gone, so only the American Opportunity or Lifetime Learning Credits are, they're still available, but the tuition and fees deduction is gone. And okay. Just one other item to note is the standard mileage rate for people who use their vehicles for business, moving, medical, or charitable purposes has gone down with the reduction in the price of gasoline. So the new standard for business is 53.5 cents. 17 cents for moving and medical miles, and 14 cents for charitable miles. And the driving force, it was the lower gas prices.
Right.
So what I also wanted to let people know that there are other options for retirement plans if you're in business that you can still do for 2017. You can still set up a solo 401k for 2017 as long as it's set up by the end of the year. And that's for people who are sole proprietors or single member LLCs or in a small S corporation where only the owner and possibly the spouse are the employees. If you have other employees, you have to do a regular 401k, and that needed to be open by October 1st. So it's too late for that. But it's not too late for the solo 401ks. They do have to be open by the end of the year. Deferred contributions can be made up to the greater of gross wages or $18,000, whichever is larger, $24,000 if the person is 50 or older. And the employer mm-hmm. can match up to 25% of the wages or the net self-employment income. So that's still one vehicle that's available for small businesses, business owners. And also a SEP, which is a self-employed pension, can be mm-hmm. open as late as next year's filing deadline, including extensions. So
wow.
SEP could be open all the way up until October of next year for 2017. And it can 25% of wages or 20% of net self-employment income can be contributed. And it must be in the account by the filing deadline of the tax return, including extensions.
Nope. Now, those are the changes under current law.
Correct.
Tell us what... Before year end, what are the things that everybody should, what's on the checklist to take care of, think about, or make sure you're prepared for by the end of the year?
Right. Well, one of the things, I guess we can go ahead and jump into the into the bills that were passed. And as you know, they are in conference right now trying to iron out the differences between the House and the Senate bills. So we don't have final bills. But one big item that they agree on in both bills is the repeal of the state and local income tax deduction. And while there is a great deal of lobbying, I'm sure, going on regarding this matter, I don't expect it to be changed. It's probably going to go away. So people who are self-employed in particular, or anyone for that matter, making quarterly estimated state income tax payments, most of them are due January 15th of 2018, the fourth quarter. I would mm-hmm. advise anyone who's making these payments to make their fourth quarter payment by December 31st of this year so they can get the deduction, because if they wait until January 15th of 18, they will lose the deduction for that fourth quarter payment.
Oh my God, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, they'll definitely lose it. So you need to make
that
payment. It's only 2 weeks early if you pay it by December 31st. But you will lose the deduction for it if you don't pay it this year. So that's kind of a big item. And I really think, because they completely agree on that, that it's doubtful that they're going to change that in the upcoming legislation. So that's one recommendation. And I'll talk about a couple more as we go through the list of changes and what the differences are. So if you're ready, we'll get started on the 2018.
There's two things I wanted to mention for 2017, just because it's things we beat the drums on. I had two attorneys we work with do a special report on tax treatment for cryptocurrencies, because I became very concerned by the third quarter that we had people, you know, making and trading in cryptocurrencies and thinking that they didn't have to pay taxes. So for those of you who are investing in Bitcoin or any of the other cryptocurrencies, please see that discussion at Solari, because you are subject to taxation. And if anybody thought you weren't, the prosecution, I don't know if you saw the IRS won their case in terms of requiring one of the big exchanges to turn over their databases in terms of transactions and holders to them, Coinbase. The second thing is, we have written almost every year something to help people with their FBAR filings for foreign accounts. And I keep beating the drum, but I would notice that Mueller's first indictment included an indictment against Paul Manafort for failing to file his FBAR form. So it gave me an opportunity to say, you must file your FBAR form. So I wanted to just bring those two things up, because they are certainly current law, but they're both items that touch our subscribers, and there's a great deal of information on the FBAR and the now the special report on cryptocurrency. So I just wanted to bring those up. I doubt you've ever seen a prosecution of an FBAR case other than Paul Manafort. I'm sure that one exists, but I haven't seen it.
Well, also, don't forget that the FBARs used to be due on June 30th, and starting in 2016, they moved that date up to April 15th.
Right.
So just a reminder on that as well. They are now due April 15th, but you can extend it out. But just a quick reminder on that.
So if you file an extension, you can file your FBAR with your final?
Yes.
So you can file in October. Okay, great.
That's correct.
Okay, well, let's dive into the changes and take us away. Just lead us through.
Will do. You know, obviously, I can't touch on all of them, but I'm going to touch on, quite a few of the ones that have come to light that are most significant. And one of the first ones is the brackets, the tax brackets. The House bill has reduced the current law 7 brackets down to 4. And the Senate bill still has 7, but they're all slightly lower than the current 7, except for the 35% bracket is still there, but it's on a different scale of income. So they've got to reconcile these brackets, and I really don't have any feel for how this is going to shake out. The House bill, while it only has 4 brackets, it has this thing called a bubble rate, which effectively can take the rate up to about 45.6%. The bubble rate includes the 3.8 additional Medicare tax and surcharges. 6% clawback of the 12% rate. Now, what that is it says that the lowest rate is 12%, but once you get to a certain income level, then you have to add back against that 12% rate. They won't let you have it in that lower income bracket anymore. And this really affects married couples with income between taxable income, between $1.2 million and $1.6 million. So if any of your listeners are in that bracket, there's potential for a top rate of 45.6 marginal rate. The Senate bill does not have that. It is capped at 38.5. Our current highest rate is 39.6, so it's slightly lower. I really don't know how they're going to work this out, but just so that your listeners are aware that there is a pretty big difference between the two bills in this area. Now we'll jump to the standard deduction. So they're in complete agreement on this particular item. And the standard deduction will jump to $12,000 for singles and $24,000 for marrieds, which sounds great because right now the single rate is $6,350 and the married rate is $12,700. So this sounds great. But what the listeners need to know is that they are eliminating the personal exemption because they're giving this higher standard deduction. So the reality is that under the old rules, a married filing joint couple with one child gets $12,700 standard deduction plus three personal exemptions of $4,050 each. Well, that totals $24,850. So right. The reality is, if you have one child and you're taking the standard deduction, you're actually losing $850 of deduction under this new law. And if you have more than one child, you're really losing on this. However, they have also increased the child tax credit as a way to kind of try to make up for this issue. Under the House bill, it's a $1,600 credit per child. Currently, it's $1,000. And under the Senate bill, it's $2,000 credit per child. So they're trying to make up a little bit for this discrepancy with taking away the personal exemptions. We'll see how it all shakes out, and we'll see how they reconcile this in conference. In addition, each bill gives a credit for a non-child dependent, which was not in current law at all. So if you have a dependent parent, for example, under the House bill, you could have a $300 credit for each parent or other non-child dependent, and a $500 credit under the Senate bill for a parent or other non-child dependent. In addition, they're allowing the phase-out for these credits to be much higher. Right now, the child tax credit phases out at $110,000 for married filing joint. Under the House bill, that increases to $230,000, and under the Senate bill, it's $500,000. So more people will be able to take advantage of the child tax credit in the higher brackets. So they will be made up, you know, making up for the lack of personal exemptions to some degree, but it's still, in my opinion, it's still going to be less of a deduction if you don't itemize, you know, if you're not itemizing. And even if you right. are itemizing, you lose the personal exemptions. So that's a bit of a decrease in deductions. So now we touched on the state and local tax issue and making the fourth quarter estimates in this year. But both bills also are capping the property tax deduction. They're still allowing it, but they're capping it at $10,000, and they're in agreement on that. So I don't really see any change happening for that part of the bill.
Right. Right.
So now let's talk about corporate tax rates and pass-through tax treatment. So if you have a C corporation, your rate will go down from 35% to 20% under both bills, which is great news. The difference is the House bill is ready to do this right away in 2018, but the Senate postpones the reduction to 2019.
Right.
So we'll see how they're going to reconcile those two discrepancies and whether it's going to be a 2018 change or a 2019 change. And then we have the pass-through entities like S corporations and partnerships, and there's also single member LLCs and sole proprietorships. So under the House bill, the maximum rate is going to be capped at 25%. I'm sorry, 25%. However, the House only allows 30% of your pass-through income to be taxed at that rate, and the rest is going to be taxed as ordinary income. And the reason for this is because they don't want people shifting from wage income or income that's a result of your efforts under a proprietorship or a single member LLC to be taxed at the lower rate. So they're only going to allow 30% to be taxed at the lower rate, and the rest is going to be taxed at the ordinary income rates. So under the Senate bill, they're just going to allow a 23% deduction off of the pass-through income. So basically, you just chop 23% off and pay tax on the rest at your regular ordinary income rates, and there's no other preferential rate involved.
Yeah, so Senator Johnson really balked and was holding up the whole process for the concern that the C corporations were advantaged tremendously against the single member LLCs and pass-throughs. So it looks to me, for somebody who has a very active business, that it makes tremendous sense to shift to a C corp. Is that correct?
Well, you know, I really haven't had a lot of time, unfortunately, to study this, but it seems to me that, you know, that the obviously the corporate tax rate is going to be lower than the individual rate. But at some point, if you want to get the money out of the corporation, you either have to take
you're better off in a pass-through, right?
Right. You either have to take it as a dividend, which is going to be taxed as ordinary income, or take it out as wages, which is going to be taxed at ordinary income. So the double taxation is still there.
Right.
It doesn't seem like it's going to be a great deal, but we'll see. We'll see how it all shakes out. Okay. And so then, and also in an effort to assist in growing the economy, they're talking about the expensing rules for new equipment. So right now, under the House bill, they're going to allow 5 years of expensing for new equipment, period. That's their new rule, that you can expense it.
So you're depreciating over a five-year period, or?
No, you can expense it in the first year.
For the next 5 years?
For the next 5 years, right? Sorry,
okay.
That wasn't. Okay. I didn't make that clear. Yes, expensing
okay.
it.
Gotcha.
I didn't make that clear.
Okay.
Sorry. And under the Senate bill, they also have 5 years of expensing of new equipment, but that under their bill, that rule will phase out after year five. But they're also going to allow shorter depreciation for real property, and under the House bill, I don't know what the how long it's going to be, but under the House bill, there is no difference in the depreciation for real property. So we'll see how they compromise on that particular difference in their expensing rules. So let's see. Let's jump to the international tax, and I'm just going to touch on this briefly.
Okay.
Under the current tax rules, corporate profits are taxed for worldwide corporate profits are being taxed, can be deferred minus the taxes paid in a foreign country. So if you're paying taxes on the same income in the foreign in a foreign country, you don't have to pay double tax in the U.S. on that same income. But under both the House and the Senate bill, they're moving towards a territorial system that only taxes domestic products, domestic profits. And they'll impose a 10% tax on international profits and a 20% excise tax on certain transactions with foreign subsidiaries of domestic corporations. And this is a really complex area, and I haven't had a lot of time to study their bills on this, so we'll just have to wait and see how this shakes out. If you have customers that are in this or listeners that are in this situation, I definitely recommend that you continue to watch this area and speak with your accountant once the bills have been finalized so that you know what's coming. Also, there's going to be a repatriation tax, and what that means is there's a lot of, as I mentioned before, their corporate profit tax on corporate profits has been deferred. They want to repatriate these, and they're going to have a tax of 14% on liquid assets and 7% on physical assets under the House bill, 14.49% on liquid assets and 7.49% on physical assets. So basically, they're going to say you can't defer this any longer, and we're going to, you know, hit you with a tax on this.
Wow. So I thought they were going to offer a repatriation opportunity, but what we're saying is no, they're just going to tax that money whether it comes back or not.
Right, exactly. But a company can elect to pay the tax in equal installments over an 8-year period.
Okay.
So you don't have to pay it all up front, but it will be taxed, you know, at up front. This election can be made to pay in installments over 8 years.
Well, if you look at the cash that corporations are holding abroad, or U.S. corporations, it's about $2.5 trillion now.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a lot of money.
Yeah, we're talking about a lot of money. So we'll see how they iron out the differences in the rates, but it appears that they certainly agree on the repatriation.
This is sort of the Apple tax. Whether Apple brings that money back or not, they're gonna tax it.
That's the way it appears to me, yes.
Okay.
Okay, so let's jump now to quickly to the Obamacare tax changes. And under the House bill, there is no change. The 3.8% net investment income tax will still be tax law. Under both, that will still be law. And for single persons with income over $200,000, married filing joint over $250,000, there's an additional 3.8% tax on net investment income. And this includes interest, dividends, and capital gains. So if you're in that income bracket and you have interest, dividends, or capital gains, you will pay an additional 3.8% on those. And under the Senate bill, they are going to repeal the individual mandate, which means that you're not going to be required to have health insurance, and if you don't have it, then you will pay a penalty. So under the House bill, that still exists. under the Senate bill, they're trying to get rid of that. So we'll see how they compromise on this particular point.
So that could definitely impact people's estimated filings in January.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So we're just going to have to keep an eye on this one. I was hoping the net investment income tax was going to go away, but it doesn't look like it's going to at this point. Also, there's that 9.9% Medicare payroll tax for persons single over 200, married, filing joint over 250, and that is also still going to be in place under both bills. So we've got the 3.8 net investment income tax and the 0.9 Medicare payroll tax.
Right.
That are still going to be there.
Right.
Now, the estate tax, that's pretty exciting. Right now, the law is 40% tax on assets over $5.49 million per person in the year of death. Under the House bill, they immediately double that exclusion from 5.49 to 10.98. And then that will be repealed under the House bill after 2024. So the exclusion and repeat, yeah, let's see. Now let me make sure I understand this. It immediately doubles the basic exclusion and repeals the tax completely after 2024. Okay, so now I got that straight.
So essentially in 6 years under the House bill, there is no estate tax.
Correct.
It's phased out within 6 years. Okay.
Correct. Under the Senate bill, they immediately double the exclusion to 10.98, but they do not repeal the tax. So that's the difference. They both double the exclusion. House bill repeals the tax after 2024. Senate bill does not repeal the tax. So we'll see how they compromise on that particular issue.
That one is of particular interest to me because if you look at the politics, I was in Asia earlier this year, and one of the things that talking with a variety of different people in Hong Kong and oddly enough, Bangladesh was the U.S. has done a great deal to make themselves much more attractive to foreign investment and really, you know, create the U.S. as the offshore haven of choice. And one of the biggest obstacles to that is the estate tax. People are afraid to move money or themselves here with that estate tax, particularly from areas that don't have one or where it's much lower. And so that is a real obstacle. The other thing is you have throughout the baby boomer generation in and this is very much in Republican strongholds, you have people, families who spent their whole life with farms or local businesses, and they're going to pay a whopper inflation tax as a result of, you know, having businesses that have a low basis. So there's a lot of pressure to protect them from that. But in the meantime, if you try and do those two things, you end up with something that has terrible political spin coming into 2018. So I'm gonna find it absolutely fascinating to see how they reconcile that in the next 2 weeks. But this one, you're right, is very important.
It's very important. And you know, we're just going to have to see. I mean, 2 weeks is a short time for them to iron out all of these differences. As you can see, just from what I've talked about so far, there's quite a discrepancy in some of these areas that they're going to have to come to an agreement on. So keep watching. There's plenty of news sources out there that you can continue to check and see how things are going, that they're reporting on a daily basis of how this is going. So there's lots of news. And we're, of course, the accounting community is quite riveted by all of this.
It's going to be an interesting Christmas.
It is.
Can I talk just about education for a second?
Sure, absolutely.
Because this is one I've tried to find good information about what the what's in both bills, but and it's not clear to me sort of exactly what they're up to and how it gets reconciled. But this is one to me which is very worrisome, because if they harm the interest deduction or the tuition waiver for graduate students, it's going to be extremely painful for people least able to effectively deal with that pain. So I would love to know if you have any thoughts on you think what's going to happen there.
I really have no idea.
Right.
This is one of those things where it's not really clear how they're going to move forward on this. But one thing that I did think was very interesting is that they're expanding the 529 savings plans to include K through 12 expenses.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I thought that was quite interesting, and they both agree on that.
Well, it's funny because one of the things I'm just a Johnny One Note about, particularly at Christmas time, mm-hmm. is I even do this with my hairdresser. I make everybody open 529 accounts and then tell all their relatives, you know, at Christmas and birthdays, put money in the 529. Don't buy lots of toys. Just keep putting money in the 529. And I say, if you get all your family and friends trained to do that every year, by the time your child's ready to go to college, it can be a tremendous amount of money.
It
grows. Yeah.
It does. It does. And, you know, with the adding the K through 12 expenses in here, that also allows for more people perhaps to put their kids into private schools if they desire to do that.
So literally at Christmas, we could all fund into the 529 and then they could use it on current education. What is it? Is it simply tuition or is it beyond that, do you know?
I don't know. I mean, right now it includes, you know, room and board and all of that stuff. So I don't know if it's going to include like boarding schools, perhaps,
right.
for the lower grades. It's really not clear just yet.
Okay, well, that's one we find out at one. And maybe, Patty, if you could just touch on for the 2017 year, what the gifting rules are, because of the holidays, there's a lot of consideration of gifting to grandchildren and children and siblings, other people. What are the gifting rules?
Well, the gifting rules are you can gift up to $14,000 per year under current law to anyone and not have to report it on a gift tax return. Once it exceeds $14,000, the person who gives the gift has to report the gift on a gift tax return. It is not income to the person who receives the gift. This is a misconception that I hear all the time. Well, if I give a gift, then they're going to have to claim it as income. No, they do not have to claim it as income. But you, as the person who gives the gift, you do have to report it. And the reason for that is that it comes off of this estate exclusion when you pass away. So if you gift your estate effectively during your lifetime, then you can't exclude the entire, you know, you can't exclude the whole 5.49, or once the law changes, the 10.98.
Right.
If you've given it away while you're alive. So it comes off of that number, and it lowers that exclusion at the end of the day.
Right.
So that's really the whole purpose of the gift tax return. A lot of people get freaked out about it. It's really nothing to get freaked out about. It used to be, even, you know, a few years ago, you could only gift up to $1 million during your lifetime, and then once you exceeded that number, you had to pay tax on any additional gifts during your lifetime. But now the rule is that you can gift up to your exclusion before you have to pay tax on gifts that you give.
So upping the exclusion is going to give you a lot more room.
Exactly. You still have to report it over $14,000, but it's just a reporting requirement, so don't freak out.
Okay, I didn't know if you wanted to say anything again about the alternative minimum tax, which always...
Yeah, I really do, because I know I have a number of clients that this affects every year. And, you know, the House bill repeals the individual and the corporate AMT. And I personally would love to see that go away, because what that really is just saying, okay, well, you make a certain amount of money, so even though we've got these tax rates, because you make this amount of money, we're going to add back a few things, and you're going to actually pay more tax because you're in this income bracket, in this income group. So the House bill is going to repeal that completely, which is great. The Senate bill retains both the individual and the corporate alternative minimum tax, but it raises the individual exemption threshold. So you have to be in a higher income bracket before it affects you. And I'm not sure what that income number is, or I would tell you. But so we'll see. That's a huge difference between those two bills. So we'll see how they work that out in conference.
Right. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if you look at the deadline. They were going to try and adjourn on the 15th. And the latest indication is they're going to extend that to the 22nd, because they have to do both the funding bill and finish this. But it wouldn't surprise me if they passed a tax bill by the 22nd with an agreement among the leadership that they'll do a cleanup bill in the first quarter.
I wouldn't,
which of course would make your
either.
Life right.
You know, last year when I did your radio show, and I was talking about all the changes that the new administration was talking about, I was really concerned that, you know, my career was going to soon be over, because, you know, it was going to be so simple that anybody can do it. But now that I see these bills that have been passed, I feel like, you know, I'm going to be in more demand than I have been.
Than ever, right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not that much of a simplification. There's a lot in here to chew on.
Right.
And one thing that I did want to mention, just kind of backtracking a little bit, when we talked about the pass-through treatment and the corporate tax rates, I neglected to mention that because of the lower rates that are coming, I mean, I'm really confident that there are going to be lower rates for business income. If you have listeners who have businesses, if you can possibly push invoicing customers into January, that would probably be a good idea, because those revenues that you are going to be getting on, now this is for cash basis taxpayers only, not for accrual. But if you're a cash basis business, if you can push those invoicings into January so that you will receive the money next year, that it'll be taxed at a lower rate. So if you can do that, you probably should.
Right. Right. Well, I, you know, getting back to the CPA question, I continue to feel that the ideal way to interact with the Internal Revenue Service and the tax authorities is to have an expert in between you and them. I just think it's a very good investment to have a CPA. And one of the questions I get all the time is, how do you, you know, you're so happy with your CPA, how do I find a great CPA? So maybe if you could say, just give us a brief overview of what the process is for finding somebody and establishing a working relationship that really is effective. How do you find a great CPA?
Well, I think, you know, in my opinion, the best way to find a great CPA is talk to other business owners or, you know, just other individuals that are using somebody that they really like, and get a referral to that person. Because if they've been using them and they've been happy, that's, you know, for me, that's the best kind of referral to get, is a referral from one of my existing clients.
Right.
I really think that that's the best way. Now, if you don't know anybody that's using a CPA to help them with their taxes, you can always go to the Chamber of Commerce in your area to find out who the CPAs are in your area, or you can go to the State Board of Accountancy to find out who CPAs are in your area.
Now, if somebody's looking for a new CPA, is it appropriate for them to meet and interview with you before they decide?
Absolutely. I think, you have to be able to click, and not everybody clicks.
Right.
So, we always offer a 30-minute free consultation just to kind of, a meet and greet and get to know you and talk a little bit about your situation and give you an opportunity to determine if you can work with us and for us to get an opportunity to see if we can work with you. I mean,
okay,
I do have,
good.
I do have clients, I do have people come in occasionally and say, I don't want to report this and I don't want to report that. And I'm like, well, then I'm not the CPA for you.
I always,
It's really that simple.
It's really funny. I'll have clients or subscribers say to me, oh, well, I don't have to pay, tax on that because I bought that gold through a dealer with cash. And I'm like, oh, no.
It doesn't work that
really,
way.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. If you want to be free, you want to be compliant.
Exactly.
Anyway, okay. Well, anything else on 2017 and what we should be thinking about before the end of the year? One of the things I always try and impress upon people is archive, archive, archive. And I
Absolutely.
Just think it's very important to keep good books and records. And we try very hard to keep them redundant so that we're not, I have a lot of subscribers who've been impacted by fires this year, whether it was in Montana or Washington or California.
Right.
One of the people on our team is 5 miles away from the fires right now in California. So I think it's very important to keep excellent records and to also, I would stress to people in this day and age, keep redundant copies. Now with digital records, you can do that pretty easily. But any other thoughts on what we need to do to make sure our house is in order by year end?
Yeah, absolutely. Digital records are great if you can get them on the cloud. So if something does happen, your computer's stolen even,
right.
Then you've got them. You've got those records somewhere where you can access them. So those little scanning machines are really inexpensive now. So if you have the time, to scan documents, I certainly recommend that you do that. If you don't, you may want to get a safe deposit box at your bank and put those important papers away so that you'll have access to them in the future if you need to get to them. If you're in business, make sure you have your mileage records in order. Your meals and entertainment records in order. Those are always two areas that the IRS loves to look at. So
mm-hmm.
make sure you, and by the way, a lot of people don't understand this either. Those types of records must be kept contemporaneously. That is to say that you keep them as you go along. If you wait until tax time and you go through your calendar and you decide, well, okay, I've got, I didn't write this down, so now I need to go through my calendar. The IRS doesn't like that. I actually had someone do that went to an audit and they sat down the night before and they wrote it all in their calendar. I took it dutifully to the auditor and I set it in front of him and I said, here it is. And he looked at it and he handed it back to me and he said, she did this last night, denied. And the reason he knew that is because it was all the same ink. It was all the same, your handwriting is different from day to day.
Right.
So he just looked through it and said, she did this last night and I'm going to deny it. So make sure you keep contemporaneous records, including if you're just making improvements to your house, whatever, just keep all of that stuff in a safe place because eventually you're going to need it.
And any thoughts on what the things are that increases the chance of an audit?
Well, certainly high business expenses for meals and entertainment and mileage, like I mentioned. I have a couple of clients that are making me a little nervous this year because they gave away a ton of non-cash items to charity. So that's fine as long as there are different items to different charities at different times and so forth. But one thing that people don't understand is that if you give away, and I see this all the time, clothing and miscellaneous items, for example, that some to Goodwill, some to Salvation Army, that kind of thing, and it's all clothing and miscellaneous, and it's over $5,000 for the year.
Right.
You're supposed to have an appraisal.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things to be looking out for. Don't tell your accountant when you get your taxes done that it's clothing and miscellaneous items. Itemize everything before you give it away. Put it all on a list. Itemize
right.
it. Take pictures of it. That's the other thing that
right.
I tell my clients, because it has to be in good or better condition. So if you're giving away your underwear with holes in it, you know, that's a problem. So you need to take pictures of that good underwear so they know that it was in good or better condition before you gave it away. So I always tell my clients, take pictures of all the stuff that you're donating.
Okay, well, this has really been delightful. You found nuggets on the new tax bills that I didn't even know about. So, Patty, now you prepare taxes and help people with their accounts all over the country. So you're not just Virginia, obviously, because we're in Tennessee and we move around.
Correct.
So you deal with lots of interesting issues. You helped us with the crowdfund, and you know there's always something. So if you could describe your website and your contact information and a little bit more about your practice, so if people are interested in contacting you, they can do so.
Absolutely. The name of our firm is Kemmerer and Schooley CPAs. That's Kemmerer and Schooley, Schooley. And we are located in Northern Virginia, not too terribly far from the from Washington, D.C. We have a lot of clients that send us things remotely all the time. We have a secure portal for our customers to upload any documents to us so that they can be sent to us securely. So if you don't live near us or you don't operate your business near us, that works just fine for us. Our website is www.kaisandkite-cpas.com. And there is a link on the website that anything can be uploaded to securely. Our phone number is 703-870-3699. And my personal email is Patty, P-A-T-T-Y, at ks-cpas.com. Be happy to speak with anyone who's got questions or looking for a new CPA. If you prefer to work with someone in your area, check around and find a good CPA that can help you. I don't recommend that you try this at home. There's just too much going on.
Right. You know, I have to tell you, there's nothing more delightful than living completely, you know, free of any concern about your tax compliance or having an audit. I feel like I've got the U.S. Marines between me and them. So I can't recommend you and your firm enough.
Thank you.
I'm very
grateful, that.
Patty, for all the years of great, just really great advice and great performance and great service. So I can't thank you enough for joining us on the Salary Report. This has been absolutely fascinating. You're right. CPAs are going to be the hit of the Christmas party circuit this year.
Yes, definitely. And you know, when we go to those Christmas parties, that's the last thing we want to talk about. So, keep that in mind.
I don't see any way you're going to get out of it this year. It's just,
I know.
Even if they pass by the 22nd, it's going to take weeks to really digest it, understand it, and find all the little nuggets. The last time I checked, the Senate bill was over 500 pages. So, you know, who knows what's buried in 500 pages?
Yes, there's a lot, I'm sure, that's buried in there. So it's going to take a while for it all to shake out.
So you will be busy this year and next. Okay, well, Patty, it's
Oh,
been a
yeah.
delight talking to you. Thank you for joining us on the Solaria Report. Any last comments before we go?
No, I really appreciate you having me once again.
You have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Merry Christmas. Thank you.